It's an ongoing conversation between classic Catholicism and contemporary culture. Your watering hole on the path from sanity to sanctity. Serving up a daily mix of truth, beauty, and goodness. It's Happy Hour with Matthew Arnold.
Perhaps the most disturbing chapter of the post-Vatican II story of distress was not the Humana Vitae crisis or the breakdown of the Mass or the nearly complete failure of ecclesiastical discipline. All of these, of course, were significant contributing elements, but the most wrenching account, in my view, was a letter to the editor in Catholic World Report more than 20 years ago. In that letter, a woman reported that she was one of 8 children. 4 of the siblings were raised before the council and 4 raised after. The first 4 were mature and well-adjusted in adulthood. The latter 4 were painfully immature beyond adolescence. The explanation? The father of the family not only lost confidence in his church after the council, he lost confidence in his ability to be a good father. Now, these are the words of Father Jerry Pokorsky, a priest of the Diocese of Arlington. Terry and Jesse just brought up this article in their program in the last segment of Terry and Jesse show this morning. And, you know, Father Pokorsky is the pastor of St. Catherine of Siena Parish in Great Falls, Virginia. And so I think he's well-suited to be the pastor of a parish named for Catherine of Siena, because she also was not afraid to call a spade, and even call the Holy Father himself to repentance. And Father Pokorsky relates the story of a woman whose father lost confidence in being a father after Vatican II, and I dare say because he was disoriented by the various ambiguities that were introduced into Catholic life after the council. Benedict XVI, when he was still Cardinal Ratzinger, spoke in a similar way about priests and bishops before and after the council. He said, "I myself, when I was a professor," right, because he was a professor of theology at Tübingen, he says, "I myself, when I was a professor, have seen how the very same bishop who before the council had fired a teacher who was really irreproachable for a certain crudeness of speech, was not prepared after the council to dismiss a professor who openly denied certain fundamental truths of the faith." Father Pokorsky says that confidence in the faith translates into confidence in our personal codes of belief and conduct. This is huge, that, you know, people don't understand that this just how devastating, not merely to the church and church discipline, but to society in the West as a whole. When a huge segment of it, the largest Christian body on the earth, suddenly has a huge identity crisis, and that identity crisis is specifically amongst the regarding the meaning and the purpose of fatherhood, it could not help but have devastating consequences, and it did. He says, "Inculcating confidence in the Catholic faith for the salvation of souls should be the primary concern of every priest, bishop, and pope. If not, regardless of office, the cleric is a failure before God and men." And he gives the example of celibacy. He says, "If priests can't be chaste in their celibacy, how can we expect our young men to grow in chastity as they prepare for marriage?" See, as my grandpa used to say, it rolls downhill. You know, we're going through a crisis today that is every bit as dramatic as the post-conciliar years. I wasn't Catholic in the 1970s, but I was around in the 1970s, and I saw all the craziness and upheaval that was happening in the culture. That was, a parallel of what was happening in the church. And he says, Father Pokorsky says, "The completely unnecessary ambiguities of doctrine on marriage and family and trading the faith for political activism seems today to be the norm." He says, "Just as Pope Francis refuses to respond to the Amoris Laetitia dubia, he refuses to respond to the recent Vigano charges of papal and episcopal complicity in concealing McCarrick's sexual perversions. Cardinal Supich of Chicago refuses to go down the quote-unquote rabbit hole of challenging papal silence on the Vigano charges and has doubled down on his politically chic advocacy issues of immigration and climate change." And Father Pokorsky says, "Meanwhile, the Holy Father himself, obviously playing to a receptive media, condemns plastics in the oceans as he maintains silence on McCarrick. And you know, friend, any way you slice it, Catholicism is a from-the-top-down proposition. You know, the apostolic succession was the intellectual linchpin of my conversion. Our Lord Jesus Christ made Peter the first pope and gave his church an identifiable structure. It goes all the way back to our good Lord himself when he walked the earth, when he was founding the church. And then, as now, the people of God are going to go where their leadership takes them. You know, in my heart, I have always felt that when a bishop fails to correct abuses, it's the same as encouraging them. The axiom in law is qui tacit consentere videtur, silence betokens consent. Or as Terry Barber likes to quote, I think he quoted it in the last hour, he said, the words of Pope St. Felix III, Pope St. Felix, I'm sorry, I've got rented lips today. Pope St. Felix III, he said, not to oppose error is to approve it, and not to defend truth is to suppress it, and indeed to neglect, to confound evil men when we can do it is no less a sin than to encourage them. Evil prospers when good men do nothing. So Father Pekorsky says, a dozen or so bishops and archbishops are calling for a thorough and conclusive investigation of the Vigano charges, but my impression is that most Orthodox bishops are just holding their breath, hoping for the best until the next conclave, that is to say, until we elect a new pope. Now, whenever I read an article like this, the question in my mind is, well, what are you doing about it? And Father Pekorsky is actually one of the few who answers that question. And by the way, I'm reading from an article called Restoring Confidence in the Catholic Faith. And I think if you go to the podcast page for Terry and Jesse Show, they actually have a link to this article. But you can search it online, Restoring Confidence in the Catholic Faith, it's called, by Father Jerry Pekorsky. And he says, in my parish, I have been methodical in my strategy in dealing with the doctrinal ambiguities of the Vatican. He says, the Pope's picture hangs in the church vestibule to remind the faithful to pray for him, but it is safer as a matter of clarity never to quote the Holy Father. And I've written several public columns to reinforce with precision the Orthodox faith of Catholics. That is, after all, his job as a pastor, just as it's the bishop's job, just as it's the Pope's job. And he says that he distinguishes, he's drawn the distinction between Mary as the model of the church and Peter as the model of the hierarchy. He says, hold the clergy accountable, but never criticize Holy Mother Church. He says, I've emphasized the humble role of the priest at Mass as he delivers Jesus to the faithful in Holy Communion and pointed out as a personal, that a personal relationship with Jesus means above all to do his will. There it is. You know, it's right in 1 John. If you love me, keep my commandments. Those who love God are the ones who keep his commandments. If you want to be, you know, say that you're the friend of Jesus, you have to do what he said. And he says, I've argued that priests and bishops and popes are custodians and not masters of the deposit of faith. And that's really the most important point that he's making, that the deposit of faith is to be guarded and defended and promulgated, not changed through episcopal fiat. Now, what he's trying to do for his people, and I'm talking about Father Pekorsky, what he's trying to do for the people of the St. Catherine of Siena Parish is to provide them some clarity with charity. And where have I heard that before? Clarity with charity, and to give people confidence in the faith and hope during these times of diabolical disorientation. You know, he's not tone deaf like some of his episcopal superiors. And he says that he's impressed by the laity's demand for honesty from the clergy. We're going to talk about that in greater detail later on today. You know, but he said that one of his homebound parishioners, a woman 90 years old, was driven to tears because of Amoris Laetitia. And he says she lived through the whole Humana Vitae crisis, right, over artificial contraception. And she's afraid that there's going to be a repetition, that we're going to be right back into that kind of chaos. And he says, in response, I simply admitted the ambiguity and insisted that church teaching on Mary and human sexuality cannot change. And he's right, it can't. And thereby, this woman was consoled. That's the job of a pastor. He's a man who takes the fatherhood of his priesthood seriously. You know, he talks about an email that he got about the revelations of Archbishop Vigano from a well-educated Catholic who was a director of religious education, a woman, and who asked him, you know, what's your advice? Do we write to the bishop? Is there any practical steps we can take? You know, why is it that the Bishop of Rome doesn't seem to, you know, he's so quiet except when it regards plastic in the ocean? And he said the sense of abandonment by the Holy Father is palpable. And he says that the most strident comment that he's heard and was also the most provocatively honest, those are his words, from a fellow pastor in another diocese who said, quote, the Holy Father has left us orphans. He prefers to protect his buddies rather than his bride, the church, in direct opposition to Christ laying down his life for the church. He said Francis is the ultimate symbol of the crisis of masculinity in the West. He is neither father nor husband. Those very, I mean, that's from a priest of God. Those are some strong, strong words, but it shows us that we are in a real crisis. And, you know, on that theme, we're going to be exploring that on the 13th of October, right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel in West Covina. If you live in or are going to be in Southern California on the weekend of the 13th of October, I encourage you to come to this crisis. You can go and register online at vmpr.org. We're going to be talking, it's a Call to Holiness conference. We're going to be talking about the crisis in the church and what can be done about it. And I am going to be given two talks on why men don't go to Mass and about the effeminization of the church. And I encourage you to come because it's going to be quite a ride. All right. Lots more happy hour coming up in just a few minutes after these next messages here on Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Want to be part of the conversation? You can call us at 888-526-2151. Matthew Arnold here, host of Happy Hour on Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Part of our daily schedule of live 100% Catholic programs, along with the Terry and Jesse Show and the Bar of History with Dr. Ed Mazza. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. This fall, Virgin Most Powerful Radio will be rolling out another original live program, Jesus 911 with Jesse Romero, Eddie Chavez, and Ruben Nava. Three ex-cops sharing true stories of evangelization and spiritual warfare on the streets of Los Angeles. We're also remodeling our studio and preparing to launch our new website and smartphone app. We desperately need to fix the bugs so you can listen live on our app or YouTube without any glitches. Plus, meet traditional broadcast standards in order to provide our exclusive programming to Catholic radio stations around the country and around the world, absolutely free of charge. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org. This October 13th, we invite you to Virgin Most Powerful's Call to Holiness Conference, Serious Scandals, Spiritual Solutions, at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina. Join Catholic authors and VMPR hosts Matthew Arnold, Dr. Ed Mazza, and Terry Barber to discover how you and your family can navigate the current crisis in the church with your faith not only intact, but stronger than ever before. Visit VMPR.org to register online now.
Now, back to Happy Hour. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Now, here's Matthew.
All right, welcome back to Happy Hour. You know, we've been talking about Father Pokorsky and his article, Restoring Confidence in the Catholic Faith. He's a priest of the Diocese of Arlington, Virginia, and he's a pastor at St. Catherine of Siena Parish in Great Falls, I believe, Virginia. And just what a powerful and provocative and really on the nose commentary he's provided us with. And, you know, he's pointed out that some people say that the reaction to the ambiguity coming out of the Vatican and the silence from the Holy Father on these various issues is going to result in a schism. And Father Pokorsky says he's skeptical, and I agree. We live in the internet age where there's more information, actually good information, available to regular people than ever before. And, you know, I don't think that, you know, there's any logic in committing a mortal sin by abandoning the church because of some, you know, missteps in the papacy. And that option's already available. If you want to be a Lutheran, you know, that option's already open to you. I don't think that there's going to be a schism in the church necessarily. But what he's concerned about, and I do share this concern, is that many of the faithful are going to lose confidence in some of the precepts of the faith. And that's going to place their soul at risk. And that is key, because that is what the ministry of the church is about. It's about saving souls. We had a lot of talk about canon law recently, but, you know, the supreme law is the salvation of souls. Salum animarum, salus animarum supreme elects. The salvation of souls is the supreme law. Now, I talked in the last segment about how Benedict XVI witnessed the confusion of priests and bishops after Vatican II. And men who, for one or another motive, either acted on their personal resolutions to the council's ambiguities, or, you know, had their own agenda. And as Father Pokorsky points out, since the pontificate of John Paul II, St. John Paul, we now have a reliable body of papal teaching, including, and he names Familiaris Consortio and Veritatis Splendor and Fides et Ratio, and the 1992 Catechism of the Catholic Church, which was promulgated to provide what St. John Paul called a sure guide to the faith. And it's interesting that he points out the 1992 Catechism and not the 1997 revision, and I'm with him on that too. But his point is that the clergy, and that includes the Pope, can no longer plead ignorance. You know, Vatican II came along and it made a lot of new definitions that weren't dogmatic and weren't necessarily very clear, and it created a lot of confusion, a lot of disorientation. But during the pontificate of John Paul II, a lot of that confusion was very definitively cleared up. And I always turn to the matter of women's ordination. John Paul II closed the chapter on that. That is no longer an open question. It never was. But if the statement that he made in what is it, Sacerdotalis Ordinatio, his document about the sacred sacrament of holy orders, I'm telling you right now that if that's not an infallible statement, it'll do until one comes along. He's very adamant that that the church doesn't have the power, the right, or the duty to ordain anything other than men, because that's how Christ instituted the sacrament. You know, you can no more ordain a woman a priest than you can validly baptize somebody in peanut butter, all right? Because you have to have the proper matter and form. Now, the clergy, the priests and bishops, at every level, he said, can no longer plead ignorance. And in his words, you know, they will literally have the fires of hell to pay if by timidity and inaction they allow their flocks to disperse in confusion again, right? We don't need a repeat of what happened in the 70s. You know, and it's a powerful article, and it illustrates something that I was talking about with my wife Betty last night. Catholics are angry. I mean, rank and file, regular lay Catholic people are angry like I have never seen in my 20-plus years as a Catholic. And it's not just about the clerical abuse. I mean, that's sin, okay? I mean, it's a particularly depraved sin. It is one of the sins that cries out to heaven for vengeance, okay? But it's not primarily the sins of the abusers, I think, that have made people so angry. It's the sins of their enablers. Back in 2002, when I was still a relatively new Catholic, that's what scandalized me. Not that there was homosexuality in the priesthood, because like I say, that's just sin. And I worked in Hollywood, okay? Homosexual scandals are not exactly unknown in that community. But when the facts emerged, what scandalized me was that everybody knew, including the solid Orthodox priests and bishops that I looked up to. They all knew. And here we are again. And that's why it's different this time. Because the anger now is an anger of betrayal. Because the bishop said, trust us to fix it. And such real efforts as were made, like those of Benedict XVI, have been undermined, purposely undermined. You know, and one good thing that we can see coming from this is bishops and priests that are finding their voices and speaking up. And that needs to happen. But there's a parallel in the world of Catholic apologetics and lay evangelization and Catholic media, I would say especially radio. Because in their efforts to defend the faith, some of my colleagues have the same kind of blind spot for the persecution of Orthodox priests, often by the same bishops who enable the predators in their ranks. And we need to speak up because we all know. We all know about priests who are accused of being rigid or non-pastoral. And I can tell you that every Catholic apologist knows that those are code words. That when a priest is called rigid, it means that he's conspicuously Orthodox. Or if he's called non-pastoral, it means that he won't wink at sexual sins and contraception and homosexuality and so on. It's time for lay people to come vigorously to the defense of good priests and to break that code of silence. And that's what's happening here at Virgin Most Powerful Radio. That's one of the reasons I'm happy to be a part of it. It is a pursuit made with fear and trembling on in one respect, because some of this is uncharted territory. But, you know, you remember after the clerical abuse of 2002 that the U.S. bishops put in place the so-called Dallas Charter, right? This is zero tolerance, guilty until proven innocent policy towards priests who are, quote-unquote, credibly accused of abuse. Now, here we are 15 years down the road, and the homosexual network in the clergy is stronger than ever. But I know personally of at least two priests of the rigid and non-pastoral variety that were not so credibly accused in a rather transparent and sadly successful effort to silence them and destroy their ministry. And it raises the question, are the guys responsible for the crisis really the ones to fix it? Because they're at it again. You know, and right now, there are members of the hierarchy, never at a loss to excuse themselves from responsibility, that are coming up with all sorts of reasons for the abuse scandal that have nothing to do with homosexuality or episcopal enabling. And I saw an article that was translated from the German that was on LifeSite News, but it was actually an article in a German magazine that was published in September by the German theologian and author Dr. Markus Bunning. And he criticized the current responses of these many bishops, especially in Germany, who are following the lead of Pope Francis and claiming that the root problem of the current crisis is, quote-unquote, clericalism. And it's one of those things, it's like I'm reminded of Inigo Montoya. You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. All right, because he started using that language when Pope Francis was elected, and he started using the language of rigidity, talking about traditional Catholics, talking about young people that actually care about the teachings of the church and so forth. Oh, I don't like that rigidity. They're too rigid. That's a code word to describe Orthodox clergy and laity. And I know it. And I knew that we were in for it when I started hearing that coming out of Rome. And that the spirit of Vatican II, which is the spirit of confusion, was going to be back with a vengeance. And so it is, you know. Dr. Bunning, in his article, he says that pinning the crisis on clericalism is a smokescreen that hides an ulterior motive. So he says, quote, there is also yet another reason for this diversionary episcopal smokescreen. The episcopal side now blames everything on the lower clergy who are supposedly infected by this self-aggrandizing clericalism. And herewith, especially those priests are being defamed who have wished to do only one thing for all these years, to be loyal Catholic priests. I said yesterday the real crisis in the church is that the vast majority of Catholics in the world don't even go to Sunday Mass. It's only about 25% in this country that they go to Mass on Sundays. And you go to Germany, and it's less than 10%. They're in the single digits. regarding mass attendance. And here's Cardinal Casper, you know, spearheading the synod on the family. Why would anyone in their right mind listen to anything that comes out of the German episcopate? They can't keep their own people in church on Sunday. You know, I'm sorry. I'm like Eddie Albert on Green Acres. Honestly, I'm the only person that doesn't know Arnold Ziffel is really a pig. Okay? am I the only person here that's not insane? Okay. The majority of Catholics born after 1960 don't believe in the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist. Okay, it's no wonder they don't go to Mass, and it's no wonder that the modern Catholics that do go to Mass and regularly receive communion never or almost never go to confession. And the good priests that are trying to save their souls, and they're just a thorn in the side of the progressive hierarchy, and they're going to be the scapegoats on this. Dr. Booning says, quote, "Yes, especially these clergymen who wear the cassock and who keep the rubrics of the missal and who celebrate the Holy Mass in a worthy manner. It is especially they who now come under the assault of the Episcopal problem solvers. It is especially these priests who are now obviously to be hit by the slogan clericalism. All of this is very dangerous," his words. And he sees that bishops are helping to set up what he calls a leader cult of an unconditional defense of the Pope because they're hoping to receive a new church from Francis, what he calls the Church of Arbitrariness. You know, they're hoping that these longed for reforms in liturgical and moral and doctrinal matters are finally going to be realized now. And I would add that that's why the current pontificate acts as if John Paul II had never spoken on the issues of the liturgy or worthy reception of community or communion or marriage or family. Right, as if familiaris consortio and veritatis splendor and fides et ratio, much less, you know, Cassi Canubi or the syllabus of errors. It's like none of that had ever been written. And these so-called pastoral concerns have been definitively answered. Although I have to say that the people who are still pretending like those questions haven't been answered can do so because they haven't bothered to implement them. So Dr. Booning says that these, and especially the German bishops he's talking about, he says for decades, they have omitted exercising their duties with regard to maintaining the church's traditions when faced with liturgical abuse and abuse of the pulpit and heretical religious instruction and disfigurement of church interiors, and that he himself now finds our current conformist episcopalism quite pitiable. Okay, more from this and some other things, what the scandal is about and not about, when we come back with more Happy Hour after this.
This is Terry Barber encouraging you to go to CatholicRC.org. Take a look at all the CDs and the downloads from St. Joseph Communications. I have them all discounted on our website. And every time you purchase a CD, whether it's a download or a DVD, a portion of it goes right back to supporting the Terry and Jesse Show, because the profits come right back to our radio network. So I want to encourage you to go to CatholicRC.org. Also, while you're there, if you buy product from Amazon, go to Smile Amazon on our website, register the Catholic Resource Center as a beneficiary, because when you purchase anything from Amazon, a portion of it, they write us a check for that each quarter. And that's also going to support the Terry and Jesse Show. So pick up Scott Hahn, Tim Staples, Father Bill Casey. We've got the Spiritual Warfare Conferences for years to come. Like 4 or 5 years now of spiritual warfare conferences. All this is available on our website, CatholicRC.org. Download the material or purchase the CDs or the DVDs. Be inspired. Pass them on to friends. We're making these available to you. This is 40 years of my work of recording these conferences, and I want to make them available to you, whether you purchase them through a CD, a DVD, or a download. Share it with a friend or a family member. Let's bring a soul back to Christ and His church. That's CatholicRC.org or call us at 877-526-2151. May God richly bless you.
buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow, that's 80%. RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Happy Hour. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Now, here's Matthew.
Okay, I've been talking about an article from a German theologian, Dr. Marcus Bühning, from the 8th of September, and the title, translated into English, is Clericalism is not the problem, but high-ranking diversionary maneuvers are. And just to remind you, for some days now, he says, we've had to listen to a constant repetition on the part of our supreme shepherds that the root problem of the abuse crisis, that is the sexual abuse of children and youth by clergymen, is clericalism. And Francis first made that charge, he said, in his letter to the faithful. He blamed it on clericalism, which is kind of a left-handed way of saying it's our fault. So there's manifold reasons, he says, for this now well-established meaningless phrase. For one, it helps us not talk about the root problem. Although I will point out that there are bishops, and he mentions a certain European bishop that I've never heard of, but there are bishops in this country and around the world who, in spite of all the obfuscation, are actually calling a spade on this, and that the root problem is homosexuality in the clergy. But he goes on to say that it's exactly what the Pope and the shepherds who are totally devoted to him don't want to hear, because they fear to be burned by the media. He says they don't want to be called homophobic or old-fashioned or out of date. And he says it's all very transparent, and that the charge of clericalism is a smokescreen, in his words. And that the bishops, like the German bishops particularly, he's calling out, are the ones who are really guilty of clericalism. He said the Bishop of Rome and all those bishops who out of nowhere suddenly discover the importance of loyalty to the Pope. Why, he says, only because it fits their agenda. Suddenly, some bishops demand unconditional loyalty toward the Pope. But he says, but under Benedict XVI, under John Paul II, he says, I never heard any such words from the German episcopacy. Why is it different now? And then he makes his point, because they hope to receive a new church, this longed-for church, the church, he calls it the church of arbitrariness, a church in which anything goes and one can finally please the world. Yes, he says, where one may finally expect the praise of nearly everybody. And that is, by the way, also the reason why the secular media currently are mostly quiet about the church scandals. Says the shepherds wish to protect the wonderfully reformist Pope to the point that they themselves participate in the work of a diabolical cover-up. And that, as I said before, is why people are so angry, and that's why it's different this time. Intercommunion, communion for remarried divorcees, blessing of same-sex partnerships, masses without clear rubrics, everything ad libitum, which means Latin for at one's pleasure. He said this seems to be the church which these shepherds now expect and eagerly await. It is exactly this church that is now obviously being desired, and for this ideal, Francis seems to be the figurehead who is now being protected with the help of a mentality seeking an episcopally demanded inviolable leader cult, something that Germans know a whole lot about. He says, and they're doing it in a completely uncritical and devoted manner. The whole thing is getting close to a sacrifice of the mind at any cost. Pretty strong words, but you know, I'm reminded about not so long ago in this country, in the political left of this country was just so inebriated with the promise of hope and change that Nancy Pelosi telling the House Democrats to pass Obamacare, and then after it becomes a law, then you can find out what's in it. And activist judges all the way to the Supreme Court overturning the manifest will of the people regarding the nature of marriage as being exclusive to a man and a woman. You know, all of that stuff happened. I mean, you got used to it, I think, because nothing's being done to change it. Nothing's being done to try and roll any of that back. Everybody just has to kind of accept it and move on. Like the fact that I can't go to my family doctor anymore. because there's a law against it now. You know, there's a whole lot in our culture that needs work, but we need to start with ourselves and in the church, and then we become the leaven in the bread. We become the salt of the earth, and that's when things change. You know, Dr. Bunning says that the situation is novel. He says it's perhaps never before happened in the church in this way. He says the trick seems to be novelty which now shakes the unity of the church to her foundations. And all of those bishops who are, you know, guilty of real clericalism towards the Pope, this uncritical manner that they are displaying, should permit themselves to be asked whether or not they're the ones who are abusing their power. He says they are thus themselves hit by the accusation of an unconstrained clericalism in the form of a bourgeois episcopalism, I don't think I've ever said that word out loud before, a bourgeois episcopalism, which aims at only one thing, which is to please the world. And now, he says, these bishops, you know, where they ever made use of their power during the last decade, he said, when did they ever use their power to put a stop to liturgical abuse or abuse of the pulpit, right? People, priests talking from the pulpit or people, priests giving over the pulpit to people that shouldn't be in it, or heretical religious instruction, of which I personally have been the victim so often, or disfigurement of the church, right? The recovation, they call it, of churches and so forth. He says, when have any of these bishops ever spoken up against any of that? He said that the drawers in the offices of the German ordinariates are filled with letters of complaint concerning such matters, and he says they've probably already been shredded, and that the bishops there did as much as nothing. These bishops, and he said, bishops, he reminds us, means, and he uses the word German word, Aufseher, which means overseer. That's what bishop means. He says it means Aufseher, not Wegseher, which means somebody who looks the other way. They're supposed to oversee, not look the other way. He says the only thing, or the whole thing now is just pathetic. And he said these shepherds have permitted, for the most part, that the church should be turned into a caricature in which faith and piety have mostly evaporated. Yes, he says, and when there was some fellow bishops who thought differently, then there was only one wish, to get rid of them as soon as possible. And here we may think of, and he talks about bishops Germany that didn't want to go along with the usual feel-good Catholicism of the West German character, he says, which has infected now the East German diaspora, which has mostly been preserved during the time of the communist persecution in the German Democratic Republic. Right? There was, in other words, there were still people in East Germany under the communists who held on to their Catholic faith. And you know, they emerged from the catacombs. It's just like what Monsignor Klaus Gomber said when he wrote the book Reform of the Roman Liturgy. He said if somebody had, you know, left the practice of the faith, or, you know, gone to the North Pole or something for a couple of years and then come back, he said they wouldn't recognize the church and what, you know, they wouldn't recognize it as Catholic. In less than a single generation, we've had such a wholesale abandonment of those things which are peculiarly and particularly Catholic. And he says, as long as the bishops refuse to exercise their ecclesiastical office as it is given to them by God and as it has been exercised in the church's tradition, he says they're going to face the accusation of clericalism, a conformist clericalism that is not willing to fight the abuses in the church. And on the contrary, he says these abuses have seemed to just give their another platform for more defamation. All this is only to be pitied. Wow. But here's the thing. You know, the church, I've said this now for weeks, and I'm going to say it again. The church doesn't need reform, okay? We don't need a Martin Luther to come forth. We're suffering from 50 years of reforming the church. We've reformed the Catholicism right out of it. What we need to do is restore the truths of the faith that have never changed. And we need to have bishops who are overseers and not those who look the other way. They need to guard and defend the deposit of faith and share it unaltered and undiluted. That is their call. That is their responsibility before God. And if we find ourselves in the position that we are the ones that have to demand it of them, then we must demand it of them. We've come to the place, there is something called the census catholicus, or the census fidelius, the sense of the faithful, that people understand their faith. They understand when they're being sold a bill of goods. People know. Everybody knows. And it's time for somebody to stand up and say, the emperor has no clothes. It's time for somebody to stand up and say, you know, you owe us the pure, unadulterated Catholic faith. And that means that we're going to have the fortitude, that we're going to have to be willing to embrace the faith, not just inherit the faith, not just flirt with the faith, but really embrace it. And you know what? That's not easy. It's simple. It's simple as all get out, but it's not easy. It's hard. Pick up your cross daily and follow me. Simple advice, but it's not easy to carry out. But that is what is demanded of us. That's what Jesus Christ himself says to you personally. Pick up your cross daily and follow in my footsteps. That if you want to be call yourself my follower, that's what you have to do. If you love me, keep my commandments. Not just the one that you're comfortable with. Keep my commandments. The first thing that disappeared from the landscape of Catholic Christian spirituality after the Second Vatican Council was discipline. We used to fast on the Ember Days four times a year. We used to fast on the vigils of the major feasts. We used to fast for all 40 days of Lent. What are the fast days in the church, Richie? What are the fast days of the church right now? I have to read his lips. He says Ash Wednesday and Good Friday. That's it. 2 days out of 365 for those who are not, you know, excused. I'm telling you, folks, we're not going to... Jesus Christ began his earthly ministry with four words. Seven words. I'm a little math challenged. Seven words. He said, do penance and believe in the gospel. That is what we are called to do as Catholics, and that is the way out of this crisis. Do penance and believe in the gospel. If these things are no longer required by the church, embrace them voluntarily and make the world a holier place. We'll be right back with more after these messages. Matthew Arnold here, host of Happy Hour on Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Part of our daily schedule of live 100% Catholic programs, along with the Terry and Jesse Show and the Bar of History with Dr. Ed Mazza. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. This fall, Virgin Most Powerful Radio will be rolling out another original live program, Jesus 911 with Jesse Romero, Eddie Chavez, and Ruben Nava. Three ex-cops sharing true stories of evangelization and spiritual warfare on the streets of Los Angeles. We're also remodeling our studio and preparing to launch our new website and smartphone app. We desperately need to fix the bugs so you can listen live on our app or YouTube without any glitches. Plus, meet traditional broadcast standards in order to provide our exclusive programming to Catholic radio stations around the country and around the world, absolutely free of charge. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget. But we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Happy Hour. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Now, here's Matthew.
All right. You know what? I'm not going to be able to get to everything that I had hoped to talk about today, but I can't let this go by. I am a lover of the well-turned phrase. Unfortunately, I have not been gifted with the ability to craft a well-turned phrase, but I really do appreciate it in others. And one of the, Father George Rutler is great. Bishop Sheen was a master of the well-turned phrase. A contemporary would be Dr. Anthony Esselin, professor of Renaissance literature, erstwhile professor at Providence College. And he writes for Crisis Magazine, and he posted on the Crisis website, they posted an article on September the 3rd called What the Priest Scandal Is and Is Not About. And I'm going to just, he lists 10 specific things, and he goes into some detail on all 10 of them. And obviously, we don't have that time. I can't just sit here and read an article from the guy. But I'm going to share with you some of the things that really stood out for me, some well-turned phrases from Anthony Esselin. He says, I have not written about the recent barrage of accusations regarding the scandal of Catholic priests who could not keep their hands and other things to themselves, and the prelates who did the same, encouraged them or shuffled them here and there to hide them. I am not a private investigator or a lawyer, so for the time being, I'll let matters take their course and see what specifics are brought to light. Now, this is not a man who's afraid to talk about these things, or you know, is not afraid to call a spade in regard to what's going on in the church. This is what got him fired from Providence College. But he's saying, you know, he's pointing out that he really hasn't commented directly on this whole situation. But he says, many of my fellow Catholics and plenty of people who detest the church, and some who are a little of this and a little of that, have said things that ought to be addressed. And he goes on to address 10 specific points, like I said. And I'm only going to share a few, but I encourage you to go to the Crisis website, Crisis Magazine website, and read this for yourself. The article is called What the Priest Scandal Is and Is Not About by Anthony Esselin. And first he says, some people say that to focus on the homosexual nature of the crimes is unjust to the girls and the women who were victims, and that in any case, it is not to the point. Now, he responds to this by saying, the whole of the Mehta crime was homosexual. That is, we do not have examples of womanizing priests or priests with fetishes for girls going out of their way to recruit other such priests, forming a tight little cabal, covering for one another, suborning young men into this wicked way of life, issuing veiled threats against anyone who would go public, and snubbing those who did not approve. There was no network of abusers of girls. This network was about men who wanted to do things with boys and men. And he points out that the response of some of our bishops has been astonishingly callous and petty. He makes the analogy, Madam, says the policeman, I know that your child has been kidnapped, but would you kindly shut up about it? I'm working on the logistics for the parade tomorrow. He says, I do not require that my bishop be a saint. I do require that he be faithful to the teachings of the church and that he obey the law of the land. That is not too much to ask. And so he says, if you are leading a double life, get out. We don't need you. If you have ever covered for someone leading a double life, get out. If you have covered for someone who has molested a young person of either sex, get out. Please leave us already. You've done plenty of harm. Now, you know, I want to call him and say, gee, how do you really feel? But it's the point. I mean, he's making a point that is, I think he's articulating something that a lot of us are feeling inside. He says that it does appear that most of the offending prelates, right, the bishops who are involved in the cover-up were, in his words, hippy-dippy, loosey-goosey innovators of the liturgy, heterodox on family matters, and very bad managers of diocesan resources, especially the schools. And they have seemed happy to preside over failure. Whether they were or no, the last people they ever wanted to see were those who complained about some sex education slime in the local school or about flatly heretical sermons and sing-a-ding-dings. Please, he says, leave us. Go home, repent, take up bowling or stamp collecting, pray, work in a soup kitchen, do anything but burden us any longer with your incompetence. Oh my, that's something I've wanted to say. I'm so happy to have said that out loud right now and to be able to blame it on someone else. So both of those things are very satisfying. The words of Anthony Esalen, but so well turned, yes, the hippy-dippy, loosey-goosey innovators of the liturgy. And it isn't surprising. If you lose your faith, you lose your mind. You know, if you can't be faithful in small things, then how can you be faithful in big things? All of this has been well covered by our good Lord Jesus Christ right in the scriptures. You don't have to wonder about this. The last thing he says, though, is the most important. The church, and I can't say this often enough or emphasize it strongly enough, the church is our mother. Not the bishops, the church. No true son or daughter takes delight in the shame of his mother. And we must not do so. And he says, nor do I want to believe the worst about any individual member of the church. And he, at one point in the article, he calls out ex-Cardinal McCarrick, and he says, I name him only because his case instigated all of these things that have been discussed ever since. And he says, and at that, I have not judged him, I think, with any harshness beyond what he has clearly deserved. Let us not be prancing play actors, shedding phony tears to hear about the sins of others. We must now be more loyal to our mother, more committed to keeping her teachings, more devoted to the faith she has brought us, and more humbled by the sight of once admired men brought to the pit by sin, because that pit may await any one of us too. When I first started doing some public speaking. When I was first at St. Joe's, I was asked to give a talk on the Apostles' Creed. And I was happy to do so because I was absolutely in love with it. I was absolutely in love with the idea of a creedal statement, that somebody could say that, you know, something is vast and complex and beautiful and integrated and all-encompassing as Catholicism can be boiled down to 12 articles that you can memorize and recite at will. That's an amazing accomplishment. It's beyond amazing. It's divine. It's inspired. The Apostles' Creed. I have an old catechism someplace. I'll try and find it and bring it in, where each article, they say which apostle wrote each of the 12 articles. I love that. There's a tradition for that. Of course there is. It's the Catholic Church, and we never throw anything away, not ever. Okay? But the Apostles' Creed, such a beautiful thing. And I went to speak about it, and this was, I don't know, in the late 90s. And at the time, there was, as there always is, the latest private revelation someplace that was predicting the imminent end of the world. And somebody asked me to comment on it. And my response was simply this. I don't know. I don't know anything about this private revelation. I don't know if the world is going to end tomorrow or not. I know that Jesus said it might. But what I'm concerned about is my world coming to an end. I can get hit by a bus today. And all of a sudden, I'm going to be stepping off a curb in downtown Covina, and then I'm going to be standing in front of the throne of God wearing my golf shirt and sweatpants. Okay? I'm not going to get to be able to go home and change first. You're going to go right from the moment of your death to the judgment seat of God. Am I ready for that? That's the question that we all have to answer. I went to confession on Saturday. I'm ready to go again, especially after everything I've said today. I got to fly tomorrow. My point, though, is that what matters first and foremost really is the call to holiness. The call to holiness is universal. Every Catholic, every single one, regardless of whether or not your particular bishop is setting a good example, or some bishop on the other side of the world. You know, I say we live in the internet age, and I think that the living in the internet age is going to keep another schism in the church from happening. Although many individuals may leave for one reason or another, just, you know, like always. But I don't think there's going to be a schism in the church because of the availability of information and the instant communication. But instant communication has also shot us in the foot. You know, I mean, in the Middle Ages, it might be some time, you know, if a new pope gets elected and you happen to live in Scotland or whatever, or Germany, there's a good chance that he's going to be pope a good long while before you even find out about it. You know, you had to deal with your own life and with your own community and with your own holiness. And you didn't, you know, that's why I talk about keeping a separation between your sphere of interest, your sphere of concern, and your sphere of influence. I don't have any real influence over very much of the church, you know, pretty much from the top of my head down, and such influence as I exert in my own family, and then somewhat in the larger community, and then in the smallest sense, even though I'm talking to more people right now than I usually do, I probably have the least amount of influence here. But I don't have any influence over Pope Francis, you know, beyond my prayers. And so I do. I pray for him. And I don't mean this as a joke, but I've prayed more for Pope Francis than any other pope since I've been Catholic, because he needs the prayers. And we need to understand, you know, the message of God is very clear. Put not your trust in princes and the children of men, whom there is no salvation. Even the princes of the church, you know, blessed is the man whose trust is in the name of the Lord and who hath not regard to vanities and lying follies. Praise the Lord, O my soul, in my life I will praise the Lord. I will sing to my God as long as I shall be. Put not your trust in princes. Right? It is good to trust in the Lord rather than to trust in princes. And again, even princes of the church. Scripture couldn't be any clearer. The Church of Christ is founded on the apostles and built on the rock of Peter. Absolutely. And you know what? I'm borrowing these reflections from Peter Kwasniewski, Dr. Peter Kwasniewski. You know, he's one of the only lay theologians that I quote in my book, Confessions of a Traditional Catholic. I have a lot of respect for the stuff that he writes, especially in regard to the Holy Liturgy. But he says, you know, the one Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church, like it says in the Apostles' Creed, transmits the Orthodox faith and confers on us the grace of the sacraments through her ministers, not from them, but through them. They are not the authors, but the dispenser. And their words and their works are, you know, measured against the unbending measure of truth. Our primary work is to stay close to Jesus, using the means, the tried and true means that he's given to us in his church from ages past, from the examples of the saint, from the wisdom of scripture and tradition, from the great spiritual classics like the Imitation of Christ and the Introduction to the Devout Life and so on. These things have and always will be the main engine of ecclesial reform. You want the church to be holy? You be holy. All right? That's my message to you until Friday. I'm going to be gone for the next couple of days. Terry, Barbara, and Mary Danielle will be in for me on Wednesday and Thursday. I'll be back on Friday. Until then, keep the faith. Be holy. Keep listening to Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Visit VMPR.org and give a donation if you can, and I'll see you on Friday. Until then, God bless you and your family.
Prayer is a conversation, and a conversation goes two ways. We speak and we listen. But how do we listen to God? Do we look for signs? I just saw a leaf blow across the street. Am I supposed to leaf my boyfriend? I guess God can use signs, but for the most part, he speaks more simply than that, through Scripture. Every day, before anything else gets into your head, I want you to start by opening the Gospel According to iPhone. It's all right there. Just Google Gospel from Daily Mass. It's really short. Read it. Ask God what he's saying to you through his word, and then talk to him from your heart. Make that a daily habit, because if it's not, it'll never happen. Now, you might be thinking, I'm not a monk. I can't pray every morning. Look, I know you're not. That's why I'm only asking you for something that takes about 2 minutes. And if you do that every day, I promise you, it will change your life. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.